As we're beginning the message today, the image that's on your screen is an icon that's painted by Andre Rublev that was recommended by Father Martin, who I've been spending a lot of time with lately. So I hope you'll forgive it, but I think it's particularly beautiful and something to consider as we think about the gospel and actually all of the readings for today, for Trinity Sunday. In preparing for this Sunday, and spending a little bit of time with Father Martin earlier today, I realized that the Catholic readings this Sunday are different than ours, even though we both recognize Trinity Sunday. The Catholics would have read from Exodus, talking about God the Father, and instead we read from Genesis, with a connection to the entire creation. Catholics would have read John 3:16, and we read from Matthew. Both set of readings represent the Trinity, but with different areas of focus. But before we get into the Trinity, what I liked about the reading from Matthew today especially is his sending out. And this week, the seniors graduated, and they also are going out into the world. And we're very lucky that we have Novi with us. So Novi, thank you for joining us. Don't worry, you come up later too. I'm guessing the disciples, and there were only 11 of them in Matthew's story, which is a reminder that some will be betrayers, were pretty nervous. They probably weren't sure how it was all going to go or whether they could really do this thing that Jesus asked. We know this because Matthew says there were doubters. I don't remember exactly what it was like to be a senior, but I'm pretty sure that I felt very uncertain also. It all turns out okay. There's the spoiler alert. But Matthew shows up today because this passage is one of only a couple in the Bible that reference something like a Trinity. The idea of the Trinity is never mentioned specifically until after the writing of the Bible. And I have to say, after I wrote this in the church notes, my mother, who is a very good Catholic, immediately wrote back and started to send me research. So I didn't mean to offend anybody by that at all, but it really wasn't codified as a concept until the First Council of Nicaea, which was several hundred years after Christ walked on earth. This is helpful just in case the concept of the Trinity feels just a bit obscure, and I hope the rest of this will say that that's also okay because of lots of other reasons too. It was also helpful to listen to Father Martin today remind us that the Trinity is a mystery, and the words of Aquinas, that if you could describe it, it would not be God. So it's pretty hard to understand. He also says that this is the Sunday that nobody wants to preach on because it's the most difficult. So it's great to be a lay fellowship where we can all just share our thoughts without judgment. But it's helpful to look at the way that the other Gospels end instead of Matthew. So the Matthew has a sending forth of the disciples with a very specific admonition. But Mark focused instead on the empty tomb and the fear of the first witnesses. Luke focused on the appearances of the risen Jesus to the disciples, his ascension, and their preparation as witnesses. And John focused on a series of appearances of the resurrected Christ, especially to Peter. Matthew, what we read today, depicts the resurrected Jesus as commissioning the disciples for mission. In what ways is this a fitting end, not only the right stopping point, but the goal of Matthew's gospel? And what does this ending tell us? This morning, I woke up before the rest of the house, which is relatively unusual. I made my coffee. I went and sat outside with the birds, and there were so many birds. Just a few days ago, the boys and I were sitting at the picnic table under a little awning at the house where we're renting, and Sam looked up and thought that there was a dead bird, and we looked up and we saw that there were two birds and that neither one of them were dead, but they were actually robins that were somewhat recently fledged, but were fledged and were just snuggled up on top of a little piece of wood. So those same little robins are now just learning to fly in the area right outside the house. Just those few minutes of sitting outside by myself, maybe a half hour, was a reminder of why it would be nice to get up before the rest of the house more often. But I also was starting to think about this evening and what in the world to say about the Trinity. The Trinity is three in one. God the Father. Jesus calls God Abba, or Daddy, an affectionate term. But we know that God does not have a gender. Now, Jesus was clearly a man. The Spirit is a source of great debate, it turns out, as the noun in Hebrew is both masculine and feminine, and in Greek the noun is neuter. Though even this is more nuanced, because the word for Spirit is different in various places in the Bible. Sometimes it's neuter, sometimes it's masculine. Another reference suggests that the Hebrew word ruah is feminine, and that other uses for the word Spirit, which meant the presence of God, are also distinctly feminine. Susan Harvey, who is a professor at Brown and studies Syriac, a language that is derived from Aramaic, suggests that the feminine reference to the Spirit is highly intentional. Just to make it more nuanced still, a Gregory that wrote in the 4th century of Nazianzus wrote that the terms like Father and Son in reference to the persons of the Trinity are not to be understood as expressing essences or energies of God, but instead to be understood as metaphors. Apparently the same position is held in 1992 in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, but I actually would love for the Catholics amongst us to tell me if that's true or not. Well, why is this interesting at all? It is, it seems, a mystery to consider the Trinity, to consider each part of the Trinity and how they hold together. But at the same time, the three in one are clearly each distinct. Each represents something different, some different part of our understanding and our experience of God. God the Father, sitting and watching those three baby robins this morning, now fledged, and finding their wings in our yard, God seemed to be about authority to me. The creation, what we read about in Genesis, totality, order, boundaries, whether they're boundaries of our physical nature or some other boundaries. Aquinas also had said, apparently, that the being of God is better understood as a verb than as a noun. It is, he said, the dynamism of being that sustains all things, so that were God to cease the activity of holding creation and being, all nature would collapse. Aquinas called God actus purus, or pure act. Now Matthew, that we read today, uses terminology of both heaven and earth, which connects us to that reading from Genesis and the long tradition of stories about the fracture between heaven and earth and the work to repair it. Matthew also places Jesus on an unnamed mountain, as he likes to do, a place perhaps, and we might understand that living where we do, between heaven and earth, a place between the life of Jesus and the life of the Spirit. It's a reminder of the charter to live between those two worlds and in the life of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Now, I'm back on the porch swing early this morning and thinking of Jesus. Jesus made this real for each of us, made this experience of God that can't be described real for each of us. Jesus says it's okay for us to be human, to not be God, even though God is in us. Jesus tells me that my failings, my fatigue, my exhaustion, what I don't get done, what I don't do well, those are what make me human. And that's okay, and that is all forgiven. With this God that's impossible to understand, it's okay to stand in God, not being God. Jesus is mercy. Jesus is love. The Spirit, we talked a lot about last week for Pentecost. This is what Jesus leaves to the disciples, what Jesus gives to us, Spirit, as the presence of God. The guide, the comforter, sometimes perhaps, and we talked about this last week, an instigator. And then the Trinity, the three in one, perhaps distinct from each of the three. Today, Father Martin talked about the Trinity as relationship among this God that is three in one. Trinity as the relationship. Of course, Trinity is still the mystery, because if we could explain it, it would not be God. But relationship is a beautiful place to start. What does the Trinity mean to you today? What does it mean in the context of all that is happening? With relationship, we can return to the words of Genesis, that humans are made in the image of God. And remember that while holding in prayer both those that are oppressed and those that are oppressing, in the midst of a national fervor, that each human is made in the image of God. Each of these people, George Floyd and the officer Chauvin, Amy Cooper and Mr. Cooper, each are made in the image of God. God's kingdom is here for us to live in the Holy Trinity, but we have to be willing to see it, and we have to be willing to live into it in both its beauty and its challenge. I have a friend who lives in the Valley who has opposite political views, and we've engaged recently on social media, very respectfully, I think. I asked him to watch Just Mercy, and he asked me to follow a conservative police advocate, and I agreed. I don't know where we'll get in all of this, but I think that the engagement, that relationship, is really important. Because relationship doesn't mean shying away or only talking to people like I am. Relationship never means permitting abuse. But maybe relationship says, look, this person that I love and this other person that I might not care for, they are both made in the image of God. How do I engage in a world where there are these differences? How do we respect differences without accepting anything that is unjust? Stanley Saunders, the associate professor of New Testament at Columbia Theological Seminary, suggests that Matthew repeatedly tells stories that recount the ways that Jesus and sometimes his disciples cross and blur the boundaries between heaven and earth. But it is only with Jesus' defeat of death that the breach between heaven and earth is mended, that it can be healed. Jesus sends the disciples into the world not only to announce the salvation of humankind, but to bear witness to the end of a broken creation. This is the work that we are asked to take forward into a broken world, the work of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, the work of the relationship that defines all three of them, and the way that we live into that kind of a love. What that means and how we do it for both graduates and for the rest of us is part of the great adventure.